It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
So much to see and do, yet so little time. Well, that's the Las Vegas conundrum. My guest has set about to change that with thelist.vegas. Andrew Corrali is founder and publisher of thelist.vegas. It's a new online Las Vegas events calendar, and it's created by locals and curated for locals. For everything about The List, go to thelist.vegas, and you can follow them on Instagram. And Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be back, Ira. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So for our new listeners and viewers, tell us a little bit about your background before we delve into what The List does. And you've changed your business model a little bit, which we'll get into, but just give us a little bit of your background.
Yeah. So my background, it entails some ancient Las Vegas journalistic history. I was born and raised here, and I've been a journalist for 30 years. I kind of got my start in the sort of underground punk scene, started off publishing skateboard zines and punk zines and stuff, and then graduated to working in alt weeklies. In the 90s, remember, we had all these alternative weeklies in town, like the New Times, which became City Life, and the Mercury. So I got started way back in 1992 at the Las Vegas New Times, and kind of just grew my journalistic career from there. I was sort of like fake it till you make it, and started from punk zines to being a writer, and then ultimately an editor, and then kind of the last 12 years of my traditional journalistic career, I spent at Desert Companion, Nevada Public Radio's award-winning magazine. And in July of 2022, I launched The List.Vegas and have been a sort of independent publisher since then. So there's my capsule story.
I like it. Well, how's the feeling these days being an independent publisher as opposed to all the different things you did working for others?
Oh man, it's like a whole ball of you know, crazy feelings and emotions and titillations. So I really enjoy the freedom. It's at once exhilarating but also terrifying, right?
Sure.
I loved working in the nonprofit world at Nevada Public Radio. There's a structure in place. There's a predictable cycle. There are established methods for, you know, the way you do things in traditional publishing. So when I launched The List.Vegas in July 2022, I was, you know, kind of like starting from scratch. And that's, you know, really scary in one way, but also just really exciting because I wanted to try to build a place where people can find their arts and culture, entertainment, and, events information in a sane, uncluttered space. So it's been really, really fun and scary at times, but I'm really having a blast.
And a little stressful, I would imagine, when you wake up at 3 a.m. and you say, oh, I forgot to do this.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. But one thing that is a blessing with online publishing versus print is you can always fix it in online, right?
Exactly.
With the emails you send out, it might be a different story, but there's not that, you know, when you have print and you have, you know, a typo, and we've all been there as writers and editors where, you know, you publish something and that typo is there for eternity and it just hits you in the gut every time. Exactly. You see it, you know, whether it's a book or an article or a headline. So the nice thing about online publishing is it's evanescent, you know, it's very temporal and it's very fleeting. So, and the, you know, the current attention span is what, 0.0004 seconds. So nobody remembers anyway. So that's been a blessing in disguise.
Because your background is in writing as well as editing, do you find that, as you just mentioned, it's when you're writing for online, especially lists, it's fleeting. So do you miss that part of your writing that is there to be looked at 10 years, 20 years, 30 years from now?
I kind of do if I sort of pause and get philosophical about it. But then I consider the sort of longer cosmic view, and it's like, who's going to remember any of this in like, 1,000 years, let alone, 10,000 years, a million years. There is a certain level of you know, prestige associated with print journalism, right? And you know, physically published work. And I love that. And I still love physical books and physical newspapers and the physicality of our of those, you know, those media. But yeah, it does, like, sometimes I'll have, like, you know, a really witty line that I send out in an email. I'm like, how many people actually read that? You know, but my wife always does and says, I just love that line. So that's all I need.
Exactly. You're in the here and now, and that's all. Trust me, my kids could care less about any of my archives. So I, you know, that's the way it works.
Right. Exactly. And, like, yeah, there's so much information just passing through the internet in this, you know, constant, you know, waterfall. And so it's like everything is, you know, so, so fleeting these days.
When you started the list, and I had you on when you first started the list, I still refer to it as new because in my mind, it is still new. And yet, when you started it, there were pockets of what I would call, for want of a better term, because you use it, lists or compilations of events in various media. A lot in the print media. You mentioned some of the weekly newspapers that used to be around in the good old days, but yours is different. And then, even as you started, it was different. You made it even more different by the new model. So let's take it step one first about how did you decide to make it different when there were some sources already in the daily papers, the weekly papers, and other sources of certain events?
Yeah. So, and I'll actually go a little bit further than back to give some context. So the original impulse of the entire project was I missed alternative news weeklies. And the particular feature that I missed was the, you know, the arts and entertainment listings. And those were kind of like the meat and the sandwich of the alt weekly, right? Those, I mean, just, you know, whether you've ever, you know, you were a fan of, like, the Village Voice or the Phoenix New Times, or, you know, or in Las Vegas here, Las Vegas City Life, Las Vegas Weekly, the New Times, you know, at their best, they were these thick, meaty things, and there was so much going on. And I love, you know, there was journalism and stuff and feature stories. But the meat of it was the listings of what was going on that weekend. And I just felt it was like this, you know, manifestation of, you know, culture right there where you could just see everything that's going on. And they were just exhaustive, you know, listings. So I kind of wanted to recreate that in some fashion with the list.vegas because I just missed that pure information. So when we launched, it was originally a traditional website and we would, you know, list events and have to input them through the system. It was, you know, purposely generic. There wasn't a lot of, like, writing per se. So it was just pure information and you could search it by genre and you know, date and things like that. And so that's what we were originally going for. But I came to discover that it was a lot of just work inputting the data, tracking all the information. So we were putting it in all manually. And another thing, you know, one other sort of unfortunate fact about the modern age is, people are just, they just don't like to go to websites, traditional websites. And it is very hard when you have, you know, big corporations that are controlling all the big funnels on the web, you know, mostly entailing social media. People kind of don't like to go outside those funnels, you know? And so we had, you know, a healthy visitorship, but it wasn't generating, like, the, you know, the kind of revenue that we'd hoped. And so, so to get to your question of how we ultimately shifted our model in August, we went to pretty much an all newsletter format. And so we're basically, two newsletters a week for our premium subscribers. So free subscribers get the Wednesday newsletter. And I found that the newsletter is the perfect model for us because we could write with some personality and some warmth and some, you know, vivacity. And I miss writing. I love writing. So I love just making terrible puns and, you know, making, you know, weird jokes and my weird kind of manic, you know, narrative voice. And the inbox these days, I'm going to kind of get philosophical here. So I'm sort of, you know, wandering off the point, but
that's all right.
The internet is kind of like, you know, it's not a fun place nowadays, right? Because it's, you know, you get pop-up ads and cookies and, you know, when you try to search, there's AI generated garbage that fills up half the screen. And the traditional search engines don't even want you to find what you're looking for, right? Because they want to hit you with ads and sponsored links and everything. So I found that the newsletter model is very appealing because I am invited into my readers' living rooms. And that's what I think of as the inbox, where I can just have a conversation with them and you know, in a much more, you know, much less noisy environment. And so that's kind of like how the model has evolved as we've moved along.
It's a connectivity that you didn't have in the original model in that sense. Because now,
we had a newsletter,
right?
But yeah, it was sort of like you know, the sidecar, and now the newsletter is right. You know, is the tank.
I have to tell you, I'm still old school in the sense that as soon as you talked about it as a newsletter, I'm looking in the mailbox for the newsletter, but it's the inbox, of course, because it's sent that way electronically. Yeah. And yet you're still able to maintain that connection. You're sending something to somebody that wants it. It's not as if you're waiting for them to find your website.
Exactly. And with the new model as well, we have a system where you have to confirm your identity. And in our first iteration, when we had people sign up for the newsletter, I was like, wow, so many people love this newsletter. They're signing up like crazy. But it was like a lot of bots, you know? And so now we have to, you know, have links you can confirm. So we have like 2,000 readers. But I'm very careful about making sure that they're human. I call it, I curate it in terms of like, if, you know, people unsubscribe, I just, you know, delete them. I'm not like trying to generate these massive data lists and, you know, exploit right. people's, you know, information. I just, you know, want people who want it to read it.
Yeah. It's a personalized service. And based on that newsletter format, how do you set it up so that is there a search function within the newsletter so that it mimics in a way when you had the original model where you would go to the website, thelist.vegas, and you would type in a genre or an event and you'd find it that way. Is that interactive part of the newsletter that comes through then?
No, that would actually be really interesting. And basically the website now is just an archive of all the newsletters. We post some extra bonus material and stuff. But we're finding that, and again, we spent so much of our energy trying to convince people to visit a website to see the work we did. Now it's, you know, we're just sending the work to you because you signed up for it, you know, and so a lot less energy spent there. So basically the website is a gigantic landing page with an archive, but I find that it's so while it doesn't have like the, you know, the searchable, you know, pure information, it's a great tool for signing people up. Because they get very enthusiastic when they read some samples, because again, it has personality. It's got, you know, some zip to it, and sort of part of that philosophy also has to do with the internet is becoming, you know, sort of less and less human and less humane. And I guess what I mean by that is a lot of it is just, you know, generated by, you know, AI, and you see like these generic written summaries of things. And when you search something, it gives you this. You know, I call it pink slime, you know, where it's just like, you can just tell it's just generated content right. with no personal verve to it. And right. so in a way I really miss the old web when it was, you know, weird and it was independent and you had a million different silos. And so part of our philosophy is like, we don't use algorithms to curate our event lists and what we pick. We have a team of actual humans who have different specialties, you know, music, books and literature, community events and festivals, you know, art and things like that. And so those are all things that we're personally excited about. So what we say, no algorithms, no AI, just us, you know, just six annoying humans.
I want to talk to you about the six annoying humans in a moment. But when they receive it I'm trying to give our audience a flavor of when they get it they subscribe and when they get it, and there's three levels, which we'll talk about. But when they get it in the inbox and they open it up, is there a preamble by you first? And then there's ways to go in terms of what's happening this week in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it starts off with, I have like a feature photo with a caption for a cool upcoming event. I have a little intro where I, you know, make a few introductory remarks and, you know, give it some zippity zow. And then we have sort of like, for the premium version, we have like six main picks. And then between them, we have other, you know, a bunch of other clustered picks that relate to that genre. So if it's a music pick, we'll give you some other options. If it's an art thing, we'll give you some other options. If it's theater, etc. But then we have a section in the middle, it's called the cheese. And it's just a random word, but I just imagined the newsletter as a sandwich, and the cheese is always the ooey gooey fun part that I love. And so that's where I have the most fun, because I get to do some writing. And often, like, you know, I'll write about just like places I've been. You know, I went to this, had this new cocktail at this cool bar, you know, or had a great meal at this, you know, this restaurant, or had this experience. And, you know, they're very short sort of vignettes. But I like to write about it with, you know, just a bit of sort of, you know, narrative zeal. And then I have some others, just news and notes and stuff like that. Kind of like, you know, an old, you know, like the old, like, entertainment columns, you know, where you're just like, mm-hmm. And here's what's going on. Like, you know, I'm like a low rent Johnny Katz. So we have like, here's what's going on. You know, I'm just covering sort of a different scene. And then I have some other things in there, some vintage Vegas snaps with some, you know, stories and stuff like that. And so that's the kind of the run of show. And it's a lot, and it's really weird, but, and it's sort of probably the most, you know, sort of counterintuitive and perhaps unwise impulse, is I also just love to see a good wall of text with a bunch of links. And I don't, you know, and I'm finding that our readers really enjoy that too. And I just have this narrative block of, like, when you look at it, you're like, oh my gosh, there is so much going on, you know, and you just want to, you know, dig in there and, sure. And jump in it. And,
well, it's a perception. It's a perception of value too, in that sense, when you see all that.
Yeah, I took 10,000 words to say exactly what you just said right there. Yeah. perception of value, you nailed it.
That's why I'm going to be hired as your editor, so I can trim that down a little bit.
There you go. Good luck.
Thank you. I want to mention there's three levels that are part of this. It's the list, which is free, the list premium, which is $3 a month, and then you have supporting sponsor, which is $25 a month. And they get all that detail. They go again to the list.vegas and get a sense of it. How far do you plan events? Because it comes out once a week. So do you set it up so that an event that's coming up is at least a week out or 2 weeks out? Or are you writing about an event that could be a month out?
So there is, so that's the thing, is I would love to have, like, when we did the website, we would have events that we would list months out. And that was great. But that was another thing I found, is that when I would track our website metrics, the spikes would just go up on Friday, Saturday, boom, boom, boom. And that told me that people were actually really looking for what's going on that weekend. You know, people are busy and they don't have time to plan months ahead. So I'm kind of a planner, if that's a word.
Yes, it is.
But I found that most people aren't. And so that's actually was another impetus for switching to the newsletter format. And so to answer your question, the newsletter actually just covers what's going on pretty much that week. We'll hit out like that week and that weekend, and then maybe a little bit into next week. But we found that there's so much going on in that space that's plenty of material for us to produce. Secondly, that's where people are, you know, what they're looking for events, you know, for, and not necessarily months ahead. We'll have a section in the premium version called Fresh Finds. And it's like cool events we found that you want to put on your radar, where, you know, ticket sales might go fast because it's a hot show that's coming up. And that's a bit more of a forecast look into what's going on. But pretty much that week and that weekend is our focus for every issue.
You mentioned the six people, the half a dirty dozen, I would say you would probably call them.
I love it.
Lee Marvin reference. But at any rate, do you want to give a little shout out and explanation of what these six people do, which the six, I'm assuming includes you as one of the six?
Yeah, actually, as soon as I said that number, I lost count. So I'm going to name them. So I was an English major. So don't fault me for my bad.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. So our curators, they each have an area that, you know, of curation that they're really excited about. And basically how it works is they find the cool stuff. I find it as well in my area. And then we just kind of keep in contact of, you know, yeah, this is really cool. What's going on? Here's a bunch of links for, you know, what I found in my area. So each person has this an area of focus that represents a personal enthusiasm of theirs, and it's just an area of culture that they really enjoy. So, for instance, Scott Dickensheets, you know, a household name here in Southern Nevada journalism, a longtime writer and editor and colleague of mine and a good friend. He covers like arts, literature, and ideas. So he writes about all the, you know, he curates all the cool art events, all the literary events. Eric Duran Valle is our music guy, so he's always keeping me updated about cool bands that are coming to town. And there are so many cool bands that just have these random sounding names, and they play some of the most amazing music. There are some great live music coming through town at a lot of these smaller venues that are just incredible. So he's really, you know, laser focused on that. Ginger Muir, another Southern Nevada, you know, veteran in the journalism scene. She covers like community events, family events, theater. My wife, Kim Trevino, is kind of our forager who finds really cool things. And Polly Schmidt, another one of our curators, she finds just really strange and unusual events that we like to shout out. Very sort of subcultural events. And she just has an inside scoop on all kinds of, really, really cool things. And I think I might have forgotten somebody. I haven't kept up with the math, but that represents our kernel crew that's out finding the coolest stuff to do in Vegas.
When you get them all together, and without giving away any trade secrets, I try to personalize it in my sense. The idea of me trying to find X amount of events and curate them and make sure that everything is that's like dry paint. I like the output of it. In other words, I like to read and find out about what it's from somebody that did that. That's why I was always amazed whoever did it at all these papers in the old days, and even the RJ, where someone has to put that together. I thought, oh man, that's tough labor.
Well, it's funny because finding these things is a grind, right? And we do have some software tools that help us so we're not having to check, 10,000 websites, but essentially that's what we're doing. I mean, if you see my browser, I have got this insanely detailed bookmarking system and the thing I've concocted, and I've become this organizational informational pack rat of event information. And so I'm always tracking stuff months ahead of time. But I feel like I'm going astray from your question. So it is, but it is a grind, but it's different whenever you have people who are personally enthused about these genres and these categories, right? And so they're interested in them, personally. And so for them, and for me, it's not a chore. It's kind of this obsessive, interest in, what's going on in this particular scene. And so when I'm searching events, man, I just go into a wormhole. And, and so the grind is a joy for sure.
It's a saving grace is the passion, as you mentioned, if you're about a particular subject or a particular venue, et cetera, or genre, that's what keeps you going. I think your pacing is right too, in the sense that it's a weekly newsletter. I think if you try to do it on a daily basis, it would be overwhelming. And frankly, I think that your subscribers would be inundated to the point where they don't want to see it anymore. But once a week, where you highlight what's going on a Friday, Saturday, sometimes a Sunday of that particular upcoming weekend, and that's a great way to do it. So you have a certain pace that's built into the system there.
Yeah. And actually to rewind to your previous question. So for our premium subscribers, which is $3 a month or $30 a year, which comes out to like $250 a month. They get the premium.
Wait a second, Andrew, just a moment. Your math is really bad. $3 a month is not $300 a year. There's 12 months in a year.
I said $30 a year. So.
$3 a month times 10 months would be $30. You still have those other 2 months. Am I missing?
Oh, no. So you can pay monthly at $3 a month. Or you can pay me $30 a year, which is a 17% discount. Which
now I get it. Okay.
Sorry, I sort of vomited a stream of words there. And all that.
No, math is not my strength, but English should have been yours, and you didn't explain it to
me. Yeah, sorry, that was my enunciation. So premium subscribers get the premium version of the Wednesday newsletter, which has a bunch of cool extra stuff. And then they get a Friday newsletter called The Weekender because – I mean, we cover a bunch of stuff with the Wednesday newsletter, but our premium, subscriber base, they're just hardcore about, going out and finding cool events and, what the latest. So we have a weekender because there's so much stuff, more stuff that's announced between Wednesday and Friday that we, you know, put this in. This one's shorter and kind of a more, you know, bullet pointy, but still funny. And I end up, you know, writing all kinds of, you know, funny things in there as well. And so people find value in that because that's got like, you know, a high open rate as well.
Do you find that you're also getting visitors or tourists that subscribe to you? I know it's designed for locals and rightly so because of the sheer number of events that a visitor couldn't do coming in on a weekend to do it. But are you starting to get some visitors that subscribe to get a sense of the city?
So this is probably a function of just being, you know, a small business and a very lean team. And if I had, a $1 million in, you know, VC money, it would be interesting to invest in someone who's like tracking the demographics of our readership and, you know, where they live and stuff. So actually, I don't have any information on that. But okay. My purely unevidenced hunch is that it's, you know, like 99% local. When I look at when I scan like their location, I think there's some folks from California, but we are, you know, I suspect intensely local and, you know, and that's exactly what I want. But yeah, I would be completely pleased if, you know, if visitors en masse, you know, signed up just because they want to experience, you know, the side of Las Vegas that's off the strip that is just as interesting and vibrant and exciting. I invite them to subscribe. It's free and you find out about, you know, cool stuff happening off the strip mostly that, you know, might make your next Vegas trip, you know, especially memorable.
You actually brought up something that I was going to ask you and I might as well ask you now. We have a couple of minutes left. And that is, I've noticed over the years, and I'm sure you have as well, that because of that explosion of events, restaurants, art galleries, et cetera, that happen outside of the strip of downtown, that for locals, it's much more interesting and accessible than it is to try to navigate, especially the strip these days. I went to have dinner the other night and I'd rather stay in the local area.
Yeah. I hear you.
So do you find that that's the case, that you get some feedback from some of your subscribers that they appreciate the fact that it's really locally oriented? I'm sure that if there's an event on the strip that's important, it's going to be in there. But there's more and more events happening outside of that typical strip area or downtown.
Yeah. A lot of our readers reach out and everybody who becomes a premium subscriber, I write them a personal thank you. And I say, hey, this newsletter is for you. So definitely tell me what, you know, areas you're interested in as far as events you want me to, you know, want us to keep, you know, posted on. And so, yeah, people, you know, really appreciate it. And, you know, Vegas culture off the strip is so undersung, you know, and so underrated and so underserved in terms of like promoting what's going on. There's a bunch of other, you know, great websites and resources for it, but, you know, we can always use more. And that's all to say that, you know, while we're, you know, primarily focused on local events, we're not anti-strip by any means. And, you know, there is really cool arts and culture and entertainment, you know, on the strip, of course, entertainment capital of the world. And so, yeah, so, you know, big signature shows or, you know, restaurant events, you know, things of that nature, or spinoff events that are, you know, revolving around the strip, you know, we list those too. And so if it's something we think, you know, I would be interested in going, yeah, we'll throw it in there for sure. So, we try to, you know, cover the gamut of everything going on in the valley.
And just before I let you go, future plans for the list, if you did have that venture capital seed money?
I mean, I'm actually just loving what we're doing right now and just growing the model and, you know, inviting people into the vibrant world of Las Vegas culture, you know, through our newsletter. So it feels like a perfect place for me because we're sharing some just great resources for finding out about, you know, all the cool events going on. But we're, you know, writing about it with, you know, verve and enthusiasm. And so it's so fun for me to do, and it takes me back, you know, to the 90s. And so it's a great place to be.
Back to the future and the past. I like it. That's a great way to leave it.
Yeah.
My guest is Andrew Corrale. He's founder and publisher of the list.vegas. It's a new online Las Vegas events calendar, and it's curated by locals and curated for locals. And for everything about the list, go to the list.vegas and you can follow them on Instagram. And Andrew, thanks again for being on the show.
Oh, great being here. Thanks again, Ira.
You got it. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.